Blog Talk Radio.
Live from Houston, Texas, the humidity capital of the world, it's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Hello, everybody. It is Friday. It's been a fantastic week. I hope you've had a great week, and I hope that you're looking forward to having a great weekend. For those who have kids that are heading back to school across the nation, this is a three-day tax-free weekend for most states. So check your local area for that information, and don't just take my word for it, because, again, it differs state to state. But today on the show, man, we have a great show. Today we're going to be talking real estate with Valerie Fitzgerald. She's the president of Valerie Fitzgerald Group out in Beverly Hills, California. She's also filming a new series called Selling LA for HGTV. We're going to be talking with her and seeing what's going on. Also on the show today, Bill Bartman. Bill Bartman's a good friend of mine and also has just a great story and has some great strategies for getting rid of those pesky credit card debts if you are having problem paying them. So you may want to stay tuned and listen in. Also on the show today, Harold Whalen. Whalen. Hey, Harold's on the show, and we're going to be talking about legal stuff. He is from Chicago. So we have Valerie from L.A., Bill Bartman from Tulsa, Oklahoma. We have Harold Whalen talking about DUIs from Chicago. And last but not least, we've saved them for dessert. And that is, I'm sorry, we have a surprise. I'm trying to read my screen here, guys, so I apologize. I must have jumped the gun. So anyway, so bottom line is we have a great show. We have a fourth guest who's a mystery guest. I'm talking to my producer now. Who's our fourth guest? It doesn't seem to be coming up on my screen. Anyway, guys, no more delays. Let's get started. I want to welcome Valerie Fitzgerald to the show. And again, as I was starting to say, if you're looking to maybe do something in the Los Angeles area, the Beverly Hills area, Valerie is a expert. She's the president of Valerie Fitzgerald Group. She's also aligned with the Beverly Hills Coldwell Banker real estate firm. She has been ranked among Coldwell Banker's top 10 agents nationwide, not an easy thing to do, and earned the attention of the Los Angeles Business Journal for the highest sales volume in Los Angeles County for residential sales, also not an easy thing to do. As I mentioned earlier, she is filming a new series for HGTV calling Selling LA, and I'm excited to have her on the show to talk real estate. Valerie, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you.
Good morning. That's right. It's morning for you guys, isn't
it? It is good morning here. Exactly.
All right. So tell us a little bit about the series you're filming for HGTV.
Well, we're in September, just after Labor Day, our third season will be airing on HGTV, and it's the show Selling LA. Prior to our show, there's a show on the air on HGTV called Selling New York. And what it is, they call it a docu-lifestyle. So it's a business show, and it shows each episode has a storyline about a seller or a buyer. So it's either about the seller and the house, or it's about the buyer and what they're looking for. And it shows the process of selling that home or finding a home for the buyer. It takes you through the process in the show. The show's a half-an-hour show, and it's generally two different storylines that interweave during the 30-minute segment. And it's been fun. So we've been doing it now for a while, and we're now shooting our fourth season, which will start in January.
Awesome. All right, so let me ask you this. Let's see. We had Donald Trump on the show a while back, and this is several months ago, and I kind of want to get your feedback on this. I want you to listen into what he had to say when he was talking about residential real estate and get your feedback on it.
Sure.
Well, the good news is there's no money around, so you're not going to have a lot of overbuilding like you do in the housing industry. You know, they overbuilt 2 years ago, and now they're sort of getting rid. And you can make lots of good deals. If you have money today, you can make lots of good deals. The fact is, this is a great time to go buy a house. Maybe even wait 3 or 4 more months, but you can make some fantastic deals. In the commercial sector, you don't have the...
All right, so your thoughts on the real estate market. Is now a good time to buy, or should you wait a little bit longer, or what's your take on the current market?
My take on the current market here and this year, first of all, the number of sales that have happened so far in 2012 are over, way over last year, this time of the year, in 2011. So the market's smoking. The market's hot. The inventory's low. And that's not just here in California. I'm in a big mentoring group nationally, and that's pretty much everywhere. The foreclosures are down, and if there are people that are in default, banks are working out short pays instead of foreclosing. There's been a lot of money on the sidelines the last 3 or 4 years, and they're certainly not making it up with the interest rates in the bank. So people are coming out into real estate. Interest rates are still low. The only issue that we all kind of see nationally is that lenders are still very conservative. They give a very difficult time to buyers to get their loans. And the appraisal process, they're very conservative on the appraisals.
All right, so if I was to find a house today, and obviously we want to get it appraised, what kind of time frame am I looking at from the time I say go to the time the appraisal is complete? How long is that typically taking now?
Well, in our contracts here, we write 21 days, but it's often going to 30 days before a bank will send out the appraiser and turn it around. And sometimes they have to do a second appraisal, and depending on the lender. But I'd say that's a 30-day process, conservatively.
Okay, and so in today's real estate market, are people getting pre-approved and then the appraiser goes out, or what's the credit situation like nowadays?
Well, what we do with almost in every situation at this point is before a buyer goes out and starts to look, we get them pre-approved so that they know what their spending power is. And then they know really what their numbers will look like so that they're not looking in the wrong price range, either too low or too high. And then we get that pre-approval letter from a mortgage broker or their bank, and we have that in our file, so to speak, so that when we do find the right thing with a buyer, then we can make a strong offer showing that that buyer is pre-approved.
Absolutely. And not to mention, it saves everybody a lot of time. You know, if your credit's not exactly perfect for the prices that you're looking at, you have time to tweak it because you're right. I talk to a lot of people, and right now strategy is still looming over the market, and I think it'll stay that way for a while, at least for the next 3 or 4 years. What's your take on that?
I think that interest rates will remain low for the next the thing, the turn that's got to happen in all of these markets, the sellers have to have confidence that their homes are going to sell and sell for a price that they can live with. What's holding back the market right now is the fact that it's still a buyer's market, although the number of sales are stronger and certainly, you know, double from what they are from last year. It's the seller confidence of being able of putting their home out there and getting a price that they can live with. And once we can kind of bridge that, you'll see the market take off, and hopefully banks will start to loosen up a little bit.
Absolutely. Now, let me ask you this. Since your area of expertise is residential real estate, and I know that you deal quite a bit with luxury real estate homes, what is the difference? Do you find that there's a drastic difference when you are listing or selling or marketing a luxury home or a large home versus, let's say, a smaller, let's say, average 2 or 3 bedroom home?
Well, it's a different demographic. It's a different target market. So certainly on a $10 million home, you're looking at a demographic. You have to know certainly where that luxury buyer is. And I've been doing this for 20 years, so I have my database, targeted so that I know when I get a high-end property, how I'm going to market it, how I'm going to show it, what sort of brochure or booklet I'll do for it, what kind of, you know, event I might do at the house, you know, that might cater to the nature of that house. I did one of the shows on Selling LA. We had a beautiful house that was almost a $6 million property, and they had an incredible wine cellar. So I went to one of our well-known wine connoisseur stores here, and I ended up doing a wine event there. And I invited all the people that had been interested in the home that had seen it, and then they invited a few people from their list, and I ended up selling the house. But so that house had a distinct, you know, feature to it for that wine connoisseur. And I think you kind of have to think about on the high end what you have and who would the buyer be, and sort of figure out the story and kind of gear an event, or gear your photographs, or gear your marketing, the Wall Street Journals, the international things that you do for the $10 million buyer that you don't need to do for the little two or three bedroom home.
Gotcha. Valerie Fitzgerald, real estate expert, stay on the phone with us as we go through this break from Chase Commercial Bank.
Okay.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Bro and Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
This is so cool. You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, who's next?
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Caller Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Then let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you...
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Hey, we're back. We're talking to Beverly Hills real estate expert, Valerie Fitzgerald. And Valerie, I understand that you have a new book out as well called Heart and Soul.
I do. I do. Simon & Schuster is my publisher. I painstakingly wrote it at night when I'd come home after work, and wrote it in longhand, if you can believe, and put it together. And it's been quite an adventure with this book. We were on Amazon and went to number one on Amazon in a couple different categories and things like that. And it's basically, it teaches the fundamental lessons for a successful real estate career through my real stories and situations that happened to me along the way while I was building my business.
Great. And so the book is actually called Heart and Sold, How to Survive and Thrive in Real Estate and Serve as a Mentor to New and Real Estate Agents Across the Country?
Yes.
Wow. That's excellent. So it's really for your peers to help them out, or maybe for somebody who's just getting started in their real estate career, or maybe somebody who needs some guidance who's maybe been in for a while. Those are the people who probably want to look at it and get some nuggets of information.
Absolutely, because the uncertainty of always being in a commission-based business, that you have your doubts and your insecurities and your questions, whether you're new or you've been doing it a while, or so we all need to sort of reflect and understand that, because we all think that we're alone in a situation. So if you're not making a sale, you're not making something happen. And my book kind of tells you that we're all coming from the same place, and that we're all trying, and we all have setbacks, we all have things that come along and happen in our lives. But to keep going, keep your mindset going. Plan your day before, know your markets and things like that.
Absolutely. And you know what? And you're right. When you're working for yourself, and whether you're selling real estate or you're selling groceries, whatever, when you're working for yourself, your mind is your number one instrument. If you're feeling good, you get more done. If you have that confidence, and you're right. I like that what you said about not feeling alone. And I think a lot of business owners do feel alone. You mentioned that you're part of a nationwide kind of a mentoring group business trust or whatever. And those are things that a lot of people, I think, don't avail themselves to that they should, because it's not just fluffy networking stuff. It's people sharing their stories and strategies that really helps them boost up their confidence, their attitude, and eventually their business.
Absolutely. And all of our issues are the same. We all think, because I'm in Beverly Hills, our issues are any different than someone in any other state or city, and they're not. all of our issues are exactly the same, whether they're personal, they're business, they're in real estate. And so it's kind of an interesting group, you know, that when we come together, we have a big meeting, we're coming up in October, and we share the markets, we share what we do, we share the feedback from buyers and sellers, we share our strategies, and it's an interesting thing to see. And sometimes you get a few ahas, maybe I should try that.
Absolutely. And I think you're right. I think that it's nice to, you know, to listen to your peers and know that everybody struggles really the same. We're all having the exact same obstacles to overcome. It may just be at different times. And then in some cases, you can share your story because you've overcome that obstacle and give somebody, you know, some strategies that you were able to use to overcome whatever obstacle you had. So I think it's a great way to get help and give help.
Absolutely.
Now, let me ask you this. Okay, so, you know, I've seen that a lot of these reality shows or these lifestyle shows, they show real estate agents really going out and staging a home. Now, and that's great. However, I'm thinking a lot of consumers don't have the resources maybe to stage a home or don't know, you know, what to do about getting their house ready. So let me ask you this. When selling a home, a bare, you know, a nice, clean, empty house, does it sell better or less than maybe a house that has a few pieces of furniture just kind of showcasing the maybe the living room or the dining room? Which sells better in your experience?
Well, since buying homes is an emotional process, I really believe that when you can show a house the way it lives in a nice way, you'll hit someone emotionally, a buyer more emotionally than you do when they're looking in an empty room. Because they walk into an empty room, their mind is they're trying to understand the room, they're trying to figure out, everything's racing through their mind, where would I sit, where would my sofa go, where would my TV go, you know, those kinds of things. And so you kind of resolve that when they walk into a room and something's already laid out in a nice way. In terms of funds, what's an interesting thing, and when you're in when you're self-employed and you have access to a lot of different things, is that you can trade with people. So if you've got if you know someone who's local stager in your marketplace, you can say, I will market the name of your company through all my marketing materials if you will give me 60 days of some furniture staging for nothing. And often, you know, our buyers will come in and think the house looks so great that they'll buy the furniture from the stager. So there's opportunity everywhere as long as you kind of think it through and don't think that every door is closed, because there's many ways to get around not being able to afford to do certain things. And you can trade with marketing people. You can trade with title people. There's all kinds of ways of getting things you need done.
I love it. You're right. I'm a big believer in barter or trade. It's a great way to stretch your funding and your resources. And there's a lot of people that have excess inventory that, you know what, doing a tile job on trade is better than no income at all. It's better than nothing. And I also like your strategy that you're right. I've seen a lot of people who will walk into a home and want to buy the furnishings because it matches the house so perfectly. So, you know, great strategy there.
It's good. And, you know, everyone wants to get their name out there. So if a staging company will put some furniture in a home for you, you can then use their name in your marketing materials, and that gets their name out there. So it's all that sort of, we all kind of work together, and it helps everyone.
Absolutely. Valerie Fitzgerald, thank you so much for being on the show today, and great luck with your book. And if you guys want to keep an eye on Valerie and her team, you can catch her on Selling LA, and that's on HGTV, or you can go to the ValerieFitzgeraldGroup.com. Again, Valerie, thanks so much for being on
the
show.
Thank you so much, and have a great weekend.
All righty.
All right.
Guys, coming up, we're going to be talking to my good friend, Bill Barkin.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Fro and Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
This is so cool. You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, who's next?
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
And we're going to be talking to Mr. Bill Bartman. Bill Bartman is a highly recognized and awarded businessman, and he's got a very interesting story. I want you guys to listen to this. Bill, welcome to the show.
Well, Bert, thank you. It's my pleasure to be here.
Well, Bill, I know a lot of our listeners may not have heard your story, so before we get into it, and we're going to be talking about how to get out of credit card debt quickly, but before we get to that, give us a little bit about your background, a little bit about your story.
Well, certainly, and I guess we could start with the old standard rags to riches, but everybody's heard those stories so many times, they're almost like chopped liver anymore. So we don't call mine rags to riches, more like rats to riches. We grew up in a neighborhood where there were more rats per capita than there were people. But from there, fortunately, even though I was a high school dropout, spent 5.5 years in high school, an alcoholic by the time I was 17, I'm essentially deaf and wear hearing aids to hear about half of what goes on around about me, and grew up on welfare and poverty and left home when I was 14, I managed to finally get my boat righted, as they would call it, and honestly, Bert, it happened because I met the woman of my life, the lady I met when I was 14 and she was 11. We dated for 10 years, and we've been married now for 36, and I give her all the credit in the world for kicking my rump, so to speak, back to the system. I got a GED. With my GED, I managed to get into college on probation, graduated on probation 4 years later, got into law school on probation, flunked out, got back in, finally graduated on probation, and with that, where Kathy and I have, over the course of our life, we've been blessed and fortunate that we've been able to have some pretty significant business success. In 1986, we went broke. I live in Oklahoma, and we were in the oil and gas business, and the price of oil went from $40 a barrel down to $14, and we went flat, bankrupt, broke, and from there we saw an opportunity, the same opportunity that's going on right now. We saw the economy being in the tank. We saw massive numbers of people being unemployed and banks failing, and so we started buying bad debt. We started buying charged-off credit cards for literally a nickel on the dollar, and with that, over the next 12 years, we created a billion-dollar company. Kathy and I became the 25th wealthiest people in America, members of the Forbes 400, and fortunately, we have won a whole list of business awards, none of which will buy you a cup of coffee anywhere, but they're real pretty when they hang on the wall.
Well, you know, it's good to be recognized by your peers. I think it does say a little bit, but you're right. When it comes down to it, it doesn't buy a cup of coffee. So tell us, Bill, you went from literally from rats to riches, as you like to say. You've been married to Kathy for 36 years?
36, yeah. Which means she had to get a Purple Heart or something.
That's right. Well, you know, I think it's kind of cool that you give her all the credit. That is an amazing thing, how women can affect us.
Oh, absolutely, Bert. You know, and it's so understated. I mean, you know, the old adage of behind every successful man, there's a woman. Well, that is so much baloney. Kathy has never been behind me. She's never been in front of me. She's always been alongside of me. And people who have great relationships, those are the ones who more often than not are the ones who are great successes in life. So isn't there a lesson there? You know, get a relationship, keep a relationship, work a relationship, and then maybe the rest of your life will fall in place.
Well, absolutely. It's very difficult to have success outside if you're not having success inside the home.
Oh, amen. Absolutely.
All right, well, let's get to it. Tell us about how to get out of credit card debt quickly.
Well, here is the quickest way possible, and it kind of rubs against the norm, and I don't want people to think I'm preaching some kind of financial anarchy or something when I tell them that, but remember now, the business that we created was buying charged-off credit cards, and we bought 4.5 million individual accounts, so I have some background here. What I'm suggesting, for people who are so far underwater that they can't see out, and, you know, that has a different definition for different people, but if you look at your own finances and say, at the job I have right now, at the way things are going, I am so far in. It doesn't matter how you got there. It doesn't matter whose fault it is. But if that's where you're at, you have to look at some pretty extraordinary situations to get out of the hole you're in. And one of the things you can do is, and here it comes, quit paying your credit card bills. Now, when you quit paying your credit card bills, it will hurt your credit rating. Oh, boy, there it is almost an immediate thing. But the truth of the matter is, Bert, if somebody's that far upside down, they already have already hurt their own credit rating. And so one more little ding on it isn't probably going to make a big difference to them. Now, conversely, if your credit is good, you'd never want to do this. But if your credit's already been shot, if you quit paying your credit card bills, here's what happens. And you'll get some phone calls, you'll get collectors calling you, but if you just keep saying no, after 180 days, the credit card company, the bank, has to charge off the debt. That's a rule. That's a law, actually. That's a GAAP accounting rule. And the bank will charge off the debt and then sells those loans, those credit card debts, for as low as a nickel on the dollar to people like me. And when we buy them for a nickel on the dollar, we call up the same customer and we're prepared to settle for, you know, 15 cents on the dollar. So a person who is, say, $10,000 in debt on their credit card right now and can't pay the 10 grand because they just don't have it, they might be able to settle with somebody for, say, $1,500. And the problem is the bank won't let them settle with the bank for $1,500. So that's the one thing they can do is nothing. Don't pay your bills. And if you don't pay your bills, eventually they will be sold off to someone else who will settle with you for pennies on the dollar.
Well, that's a great strategy. It's kind of like reverse leverage.
It is exactly that. You know, it's kind of the one step short of bankruptcy. You know, when you file bankruptcy because you're so far in you can't get back out, you know you're going to hurt your credit, but you also know you're going to effectuate a solution. You know you're going to make a whole bunch of that junk go away. Well, this is a half step. Now, it's certainly right in line with going bankrupt because it's heading down that path, but it may be the one thing that keeps you from filing bankruptcy. And it would be better to have one or two creditors messing up your credit score as wiping out all of them.
Right. Typically, bankruptcy, and I know the bankruptcy law has changed, and maybe you don't know the answer, but typically bankruptcy tends to stay on your credit for, what is it now, 7 or 10 years?
It is as long as 10 years that it will continue to show up or haunt you, as they say. And yes, I'm familiar with that. In 1986, we filed bankruptcy. So I know again from experience that that is the last straw, last resort, and I don't encourage people to do it unless they just absolutely can't take care of their family, can't take care of their other obligations. There is a higher sense of order here, and that's why the bankruptcy rules were created. You know, not for to let people run up bills and just say, oh, the heck with it, I'll just walk away from it. No, it's for good, honest, serious, legitimate people who find themselves in a place they never would have imagined.
Sure. And you know, the thing that you just hit on there that people don't realize is that when you start believing that it'll never happen to you, that's when it happens to you.
Oh, and right now, Bert, it's happening to people who have never, ever imagined it can happen to them. See, in the old days, a few years ago, we used to think that people with credit card problems and the people who would think about bankruptcy, well, those are, you know, we would kind of put them in that, well, they must be lazy or they must not have gotten a good education or they probably didn't work very hard. And we kind of put them all in a little category, rightly or wrongly. That's kind of the way we do things. But this time around, in this great recession we're in right now, there are people who did it by the rules. They went to school, they studied hard, they got good grades, they went and got a job, they showed up for work every single day of their life, they went and bought a house with a white picket fence, they married the girl next door, they followed every single rule to follow the American dream, and it turned out that maybe some of that wasn't as true as they told us. And now these are people who have never failed before, have never had difficulties before, and now they're unemployed and not able to pay their bills.
You know, something that you just brought up, I think that this generation is one of those generations that hasn't been tested. This economy is their first test.
It is indeed, and I feel so bad for the people going through what they're going through right now. Now, a guy like me, I'm 61 years old, and I have failed and succeeded and failed and succeeded and failed and succeeded, and I have screwed up so many times it's almost pathetic. I'm good at failure. I'm good at screwing up. I'm good at getting knocked down and figuring out how to get back up because I've done it a lot. Now, people who have never had it happen to them, it is the most traumatic thing they may experience in their entire lifetime. And quite frankly, some of them may not know how to deal with it.
Well, it sounds like, you know, what you're saying is failure is a good way to succeed.
It is the only way to succeed. And here's a challenge I give everybody on this call. The Forbes 400 is a list that's published every October by Forbes magazine, so you can go online and get it or wherever you might choose to read it. And read the stories of the people who are on the Forbes 400 list. And except for a few people who inherited some money, and there's usually a handful of them on there, the ones who are self-made, every one of them failed at least once. Some of them failed a half a dozen times. Some of them have filed bankruptcy three or four times in their life. And that's what it almost takes, failure to succeed.
Well, you know, Walt Disney, I believe, filed bankruptcy four
Indeed.
Or five times.
Indeed.
And on top of that, his best friend, which is the famous Art Linkletter, you know, gave up on him, wouldn't lend him the $1,000 he needed to buy what is now Walt Disney in Anaheim.
Mm-hmm. No, but, I mean, the stories are, you know, I mean, they're by the thousands. So, you know, when I started, I'm a student of this industry because I try to share what it is I've learned along the way. The very reason you and I are on this call today is hoping that maybe somebody will hear something that might have some value in their life. Well, I began looking at all of the reasons people succeed and the reasons people fail, and I found an awful lot of correlation between having failed and learning a lesson and then going to a much higher success than you ever would have been able to go to but for the failure.
Absolutely. Bill Bartman, thank you very much. This is Bert Martinez. Thank you.
And Bert, you're very welcome. Have a great day.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Your car was in an accident. The good news, you're not hurt. The bad news, the insurance company is not treating fairly. Who do you call? Call LibertyPropertyDamage.com. With over 6 million auto accidents per year, insurance companies cut corners wherever possible. LibertyPropertyDamage.com won't let them. If you are being treated unfairly by any insurance company, call LibertyPropertyDamage.com right now. We'll get you everything you deserve. Total loss, diminished value, rental reimbursement. Call LibertyPropertyDamage.com at 832-303-2378.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Okay, we're back. And we are going to be talking with Harold Wallen. And Harold is a well-known trial attorney in the Chicago, Illinois area. He has been practicing law for 18 years and has tried many types of cases, including criminal defense, personal injury, divorce, and contracts. He is best known, however, for defending drunk driving cases. Mr. Wallen has handled thousands of DUI cases in northern Illinois, and I'm excited to talk to him. Harold, welcome to the show.
Hi, Bert. How are you?
Good, man. How are you doing?
Okay, pretty good.
All right, so let me ask you this. Now, how many cases have you tried to verdict?
Over 100, about 150, and I've done, you know, probably over 1,000 pretrial motions, arbitrations, and other types of matters where we had contested evidentiary hearings.
Gotcha. All right. So obviously, you know, you're unique because you literally been in the legal trenches, and you have been doing this for quite a while. And the reality is that even though on TV it's portrayed that, as though every attorney does this, what you guys do is very unique because not everybody tries cases.
No, I'm in the courtroom pretty much every day, and I have maybe a trial or a hearing set two or three times a week, sometimes more. But a lot of attorneys, they just, you know, sit in their office and they're doing a lot of paperwork or, you know, transactional work. So it's a small part of the legal profession that's actually out there trying cases on a regular basis. I've known attorneys who maybe 20 years of experience have only tried one or two cases. My sister's an attorney. She's never been in a courtroom. She's been practicing for 12 years.
And out of curiosity, what kind of law does she practice?
Transactional type of work and workers' compensation issues.
Gotcha. You know, I have an attorney who helped me draft our estate plan, and he liked to brag that, you know, he's been practicing law for 22 years and has never been in a courtroom. So
yep. not unusual.
That's right.
It's totally different from my life, yeah.
Absolutely. Now, let me ask you this. I want to get to the nitty-gritty because you hear this all the time. If somebody gets pulled over by the police, what under law do they have to do? In other words, how much cooperation do they have to give that police officer? Do they have to show them a driver's license and insurance and registration, or are they allowed to not cooperate at all? Walk us through just an average traffic stop.
Okay. Well, first of all, this can vary from state to state. So I have to put that out there so I'm not giving legal advice for every state. But generally, you do have a duty to tender your license and insurance, and in some states a registration card to the officer. You don't have to, if the officer suspects, for example, that you may be intoxicated, you do not have to provide any evidence against yourself. So, in other words, a person is not obligated to say where they've been, whether they've been drinking, or anything like that, although they also don't have a right to lie either. You can be prosecuted for obstruction of justice or something similar to that. Another question that often comes up is, are you required to take a breath test? Now, in Illinois, where I practice, you are not, although there is a license suspension for refusing to take a breath test. But
now, let me ask you this. Okay, so you're not required to take a breath test, and this, again, we're talking about Illinois.
Right.
But again, if you refuse to take it, then the state can automatically suspend your license, or is it a hearing first?
Well, they will automatically suspend your license on the 46th day after the date of arrest. So that gives you an opportunity to file a petition with the court to challenge the suspension. But it's you have a very limited hearing, and the issue is not whether you were under the influence of alcohol, but merely whether the officer had a reasonable suspicion to believe that you were under the influence, or whether or not you actually refused. So it's just a few legal grounds to challenge that suspension.
Wow. Okay. So, I mean, really, at this point, the court is going to rest its case a lot on whether or not this police officer had enough suspicion or probable cause to do what he did.
Correct. So it may be that the officer was wrong, and you were not under the influence, but it was not unreasonable for him to suspect you. And therefore, you may be found not guilty of the DUI, but still end up having your license suspended for 1 to 3 years for refusing a test.
Wow. I'm sorry. I'm just like blown away by that. So you're found not guilty of the DUI or DWI. You weren't intoxicated, but yet because you refused to take a breath test, which is one of your rights, you still may be suspended for 1 to 3 years. I don't think that even makes sense.
Well, these laws don't often make sense. They're put together in response to something that happened in the newspaper. At least that's what my experience has been, is that there'll be a story that gets someone riled up, and it's very easy for the politicians to say I'm tough against drunk driving and pass a law, sometimes without a whole lot of thought as to the ultimate consequences or what this actually means.
Wow. Okay. So now let me ask you this. In your experience trying so many cases, and I'm not trying to put you on the spot here, but how many cases are you able to successfully represent your clients versus how many times does the prosecution win?
Well, it's hard to say. So many cases, most cases in the criminal courts result in some sort of plea deal. So when I take a case, I think the numbers are well over 90% end up in some sort of either a plea in this case, a DUI or a reduced charge. When I do go to trial, normally those are the weaker cases, in my opinion. Of course, the officer may see differently, but in my opinion, they're a weaker case. I tend to win about 90% of the cases I take to trial, but maybe that's only 10% of the total cases that I have will end up in a trial posture. So the
gotcha.
State
and again, I mean, I think that's smart because obviously you're looking at it from your expertise. You want to be able to explain to your clients, listen, you know, I think that we have a good chance of winning this. Obviously, there's always some risk involved when you take something to trial.
Sure.
And on cases that maybe their evidence is a little bit stronger against the client, you can say, listen, you're better off just taking a plea deal, getting some alcohol treatment, and just take this down the road.
Right, correct. Now, sometimes
now, let me ask you this. I'd like to, you know, and again,
please.
Not trying to put you on the spot, in this case is in New York, so it has nothing to do with Chicago at all, but I want you, kind of your opinion.
Sure.
As somebody who's in the trenches dealing with DWI on a regular basis. A couple of years ago, there was a gentleman who was convicted for murder because he killed, I think, two people while driving under the influence. He was absolutely drunk. There was no question about it. The prosecutor went to charge him with murder and ended up getting murder. Do you think that's too extreme, or is that what we have to do as a society?
I think as a general rule, that sounds too extreme because for the whole, our whole history of jurisprudence, we've always felt that when, first of all, when you charge someone with murder, that typically requires a specific intent to cause harm to a person. And at the same time, for going back for centuries, we've also said that if someone is intoxicated, that diminishes a person's intent. So traditionally, intoxication was a defense to specific intent crimes like a murder or a battery. In more recent times, there's been a tendency to try and get rid of that defense. We've done so in Illinois for cases like a battery or a murder. It's not a straight defense, although it could be mitigation in the case. And I think typically most drunk drivers are doing so either because they have a lapse in judgment, they don't realize how intoxicated they are, or they can't control their drinking if they're an alcoholic. And so, to me, when someone gets behind the wheel and unfortunately causes the death of another person, that may be reckless behavior, and perhaps a charge of reckless homicide may be appropriate, but murder, which typically requires the specific intent that you're going to try and harm somebody or cause their death, that's lacking in a drunk driving offense.
Right, and so I'm waiting to see what happens on an appeal. They are appealing the case, and obviously that takes time. But you're right. I think that as you said earlier, politicians will rally around a hot topic. In this case, this prosecutor got a murder conviction. We'll see if it sticks, and it'll be interesting to see what happens there in New York.
Yeah, it will be, because I'm sure every other prosecutor across the country is looking at that, and will try and lobby to get their laws changed. Here in Illinois, we have a DUI causing a death, and we have a kind of a strange recent court opinion that allows for a prosecutor to seek the charge of DUI causing a death, even if a person was not under the influence of alcohol or drugs, if they had drugs in their system at the time. So in other words, we just had a case where a lady had smoked some marijuana, and a few weeks before, apparently, or a few days before the time she got involved in an accident. Whereas a chain reaction accident, she rear-ended one car, which rear-ended another car, and ultimately a car hit a couple of people who were on bicycles. And
wow.
She was not under the influence, but under the law in Illinois, if you're involved in a fatal accident, you're required to give blood. And it turned up that she had marijuana in her system. And in Illinois, we have a zero-tolerance law. So if you have any drugs in your system, that is a DUI. And the courts held that it doesn't matter under our law whether or not she was actually impaired. And she was found guilty of a DUI death. She was originally sentenced to 7 years in prison. And 2 days ago, the judge just reduced it by 1 year to 6 years. But 6 years in prison basically for being involved in what to me is an unfortunate fender bender, you know, or whatever, unfortunate accident that normally would just be a traffic citation of something like failure to keep a proper distance. And she would have had, of course, a big personal injury lawsuit against her, I'm sure, but not a criminal case, just a traffic case and a personal injury case. But because of having marijuana in her system from a few days before, now she's looking at 6 years.
That's incredible. That is incredible. But you know what? It goes to show you that I think that zero tolerance is becoming more of a common thing, and we have to, you know, people have to be careful of what they're doing with their recreational stuff. And it's just crazy that something like that that you don't even contemplate, you know, 3 or 4 days later, all of a sudden now you're serving 6 years.
Sure.
Harold, I appreciate you being on the show. And guys, I've been talking to Harold Whalen, legal expert, attorney at law in Chicago, Illinois. Harold, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Thanks for having me, Bert. Bye.
Bye-bye. Hey, coming up next, we have one of my favorite contributors, Dr. Lisa Hart. And in case you're wondering why she's one of my favorite people, stay tuned. You're going to be in a treat for this. She is a physician from Austin. Dr. Lisa Hart offers the latest in anti-aging, weight loss, hormone balancing, and really just everything you need for optimal health care. You know, last time that she was on the show, she was interviewed by Catherine Lee, who was kind of subbing for me while I was taking a 3-day vacation. But prior to that, we had this really engaging conversation regarding gluten allergies and sensitivity. So it's always a delight to have her on the show. And again, you're going to be well taken by Dr. Lisa. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
All right, so tell me, last time you and I talked, we talked a little bit about the gluten sensitivity, something that my family and I have been now, actively engaged in avoiding and also getting tested for. We have finally made some appointments to get tested for it, so I'm eager to find out and share the results with not only you, but obviously with the audience as well. But you know, I know that you also deal with other areas as well, such as cholesterol and weight gain and things of that nature. And so I want to ask you this. What about cholesterol versus risk for stroke or heart attack? Should somebody be worried if they have, quote, normal cholesterol?
Yes. Because half the people who die of a heart attack or stroke have perfectly normal cholesterol. And a lot of people who have a fatal, you know, first heart attack or stroke have actually been worried about their risk, and they will have gone even to a cardiologist or one of these heart hospitals and had a big evaluation and been given the clean bill of health, and then a couple of days later have a big event. Because it's not just about cholesterol, and it's not just about the plaque that's in the artery on an ongoing basis. Inflammation really is the biggest factor, and inflammation typically occurs in the wall of the blood vessel, and then it reaches a critical heat and then shoots back into the opening or the lumen of the blood vessel, and that's when you have your heart attack or stroke in so many cases. So you really want to know what your inflammation is.
You know, and what's interesting to me, Dr. Lisa, is that, you know, when you and I first met a month or so ago, you talked about how inflammation is one of the, items or elements that really increase our aging. And so now
yes,
you're saying that
absolutely.
We also have inflammation that attacks our veins, our arteries, correct?
Yes. Inflammation is key for heart attack and stroke and the prevention of heart attack and stroke. Dementia, a lot of inflammation is involved with diabetes, premature aging of the skin, inflammation. So
wow, that's
definitely
incredible.
Worthwhile to check.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask you this. Okay, back to the cholesterol. You see all these drugs on TV. Basically, they make it sound like if you have high cholesterol, pop a pill whenever you like. Is that the best solution, or is that really even a good solution?
In rare cases, it's necessary, but in most cases, it's bad. The statin medications, which are a common, they're the worst, really. They're a common medication they're really given out like vitamins, it seems, for high cholesterol. And the thing is, we've always known that they can cause liver damage. You have to have your liver enzymes monitored regularly when you're on those medications. They can cause some people to start breaking down their muscle, and they get terrible muscle cramps. That's why some people complain of muscle pain, especially in their legs, when they're on these medications. That's very bad. And that, actually, the breakdown of the muscle can lead to kidney failure. And then more recently, they've shown that statin use increases diabetes, increases people who are becoming diabetic, and it's increasing dementia, Alzheimer's dementia.
Wow.
So it's
wow.
not a drug so, I'd want to go on.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what's incredible to me is that these drug commercials have literally become like the car commercials where they give you like, you know, it's a 30-second commercial. You got 20 seconds of actual commercial, and then you got 10 seconds of really fast-talking disclaimers that this drug can do this, that, the other thing, including but not limited to diarrhea, death, dementia, this, that, the other thing. And I'm thinking, man, there's got to be a better choice.
Right. Well, you know, it really comes down to lifestyle. So achieving a good weight, and sometimes it doesn't – I mean, you could have someone who's really obese, and even losing that first 10 pounds is going to make a big difference in their insulin sensitivity, and insulin is really involved in this whole heart attack and stroke risk, dementia. I mean, we're a web. We're not just isolated silos of systems, so everything affects everything else. So that's why it's so hard to stick to just one, you know, one thing, because it is all related. But so the weight, and it's what you eat. And there's this one test that I like to do. It's an ApoE genotype. You only have to have it done once in your life because it's a gene, it's your DNA. And depending on what genotype you are, some genotypes, like a 4-4 or a 3-4, really absorb so much more of the cholesterol from their gut. And the drugs don't even work for them very well, even though they're commonly put on them. But they have to eat less dairy fat, less animal fat, and certainly less laboratory manipulated fats or the trans fats.
Gotcha. Now, are these types of tests expensive?
They can be. If you go to a lab or just a regular doctor and they run it, if you were paying cash, it could be $2,000 or more. But if you use Boston Heart Lab, for instance, I have a contract with them. They do no balance billing, which means even if you had the worst possible insurance, if you have insurance, you could have $20,000 deductible and have met none of it, you still won't get a bill. So, and theirs is an outstanding panel, and it even includes some of these genetic tests. They're the only lab that I know that doesn't charge you strictly cash for genetic tests. So, anyway, so finding a doctor who does the Boston Heart is a deal. Otherwise, there's another lab that I use for cash for the full cutting-edge panel. I can provide it for $575. So it's just, you know, you have to be a good consumer as a patient.
Right, right. Well, you know what, and that's, you know, either way, either of those choices doesn't seem to me to be outrageous for the benefit that you're getting, because you're talking about, A, you do it one time, and from there you're able to tell them what other steps they can take to avoid the risk of heart attack or stroke.
Right.
And
it's,
I think,
it's,
you know,
like that car manual, really. You know, we don't get our manual, but this is, you know, we could put together a manual based on all these DNA tests. That's what I tell my patients.
Wow. I mean, and I love that. You know what, and I think that, and I'd like your opinion on this as a healthcare professional. I think that as a society we've gotten somewhat brainwashed, and you know, with all the marketing out there, and our, what's the word I'm looking for, our need to have it quicker, that people have gotten away from eating good foods and just cooking for themselves, and therefore they're really putting their whole life at risk because they're eating all this prepackaged, you know, foods that are just chock full of preservatives and other chemicals.
That's right, and they've been processed, which equals digested basically by the machine, so your body doesn't have to work to digest it, and it spikes your blood sugar, and you really have lots of calories and very little nutrition.
Right, and I think, you know, again, last time you and I spoke, that what we see, or at least in my opinion, one of the results that we see is this gluten sensitivity, where it's becoming an epidemic. I think it's only going to get worse as other companies try to manipulate the DNA of plants and foods or whatever, that it's just going to eventually cause the government to come in and shut these people down, because they're really going to destroy millions of people's lives because of them manipulating the DNA.
It is risky. It's very risky. In some countries in the world, they don't allow it. And they were ridiculed for a while, but now that we're seeing the effects of all these genetically modified foods, you know, now who was right? So
That's right.
It's alarming. And there are a lot of false negatives with the gluten sensitivity tests that are typically done. So people need to be careful to keep that in mind and make sure, you know, they know which tests they're getting. And if they get a negative, you know, take into account, it might be a false negative unless it's a definitive test.
Okay. Now, let me ask you this, and I'm going to kind of, go back to our original topic, which is the stroke and heart attack. At mm-hmm. what age should I get screened for heart attack and stroke risk?
Well, you know, if you look at the American Heart Association website, they still recommend at age 20. But with functional medicine, we recommend at least by age 9, because all the, you know, people used to start getting diagnosed with type 2 diabetes and high blood pressure, this sort of thing. By their 40s, you know, it would start to happen. Now, even elementary age students, kids, are starting to have high blood pressure, the same kind of high blood pressure that middle-aged people used to get, and diabetes. And they expect that kids, elementary and high school, it's going to skyrocket, that they are going to present to the ER, and it's actually going to be heart attack and stroke. And not because of an arrhythmia or some genetic malformation of the heart, but because of those middle-aged diseases that are lifestyle diseases that, you know, they're getting them when they're babies.
Right. Well, and you see it. I mean, you know, you have to be blind not to see the fact that we have literally hundreds and thousands and millions of children here in America that are obese, overweight, and have no chance of being healthy because they are already so unhealthy, so overweight, that unless somebody steps in and really takes some massive corrective measure, they're going to suffer the rest of their lives. They're going to be miserable.
That's right. That's
all right. Now, tell us, your website is drlisa.com?
Yes, drlisa.com.
Great.
And I'm happy to help people figure out where to get these labs at a good rate, or where to even get these labs. Because if you go to a typical family medicine doctor, they're just going to run your straight-up basic lipid panel. But, you know, that's 20 years ago medicine. We do that, but that's just a small piece. That's going to leave so much behind the curtain. You know, you really want to know about all these inflammatory markers.
I love it. Dr. Lisa Hart, check her out, drlisa.com. She'll be glad to give you some free information, point you in the right direction, give you some tips on how you can save money and get these tests on. Dr. Lisa, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you. I loved it as usual. Bye.
All righty. We'll talk to you later.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.